Hey Fresh Capital listeners, we've got a special episode this week. Albert and I are talking to Amit Majumdar, former VP at Morgan Stanley and current VP of Equity Management Product at Capita, a SaaS net startup with offices in India and Singapore. Continuing our focus on the pod on some of the best companies in Asia, Albert and I are talking to Amit about what he's seeing in the startup space in Singapore and Asia. This is one of our first live recordings, so forgive my audio in this particular episode. If you want to connect with Amit, check out his details in the show notes. Keep listening and enjoy. Welcome to another episode of Fresh Capital. Every week we provide a refreshingly simple way to learn about companies and investing. My name is Dan. Joining me, special episode, Amit. How are you doing?
Yeah, well, thanks. Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. This is actually the first time we've ever recorded in person. Also, very first time to record in person with a guest, so thanks for coming.
A special occasion.
Yeah, Amit, we met a few months ago through Early Work, through ESOP, so Employee Share Option Plan, article that you wrote, and I happened to kind of have a bit of input on that. You're based in Southeast Asia, based in Singapore. I called you the startup expert, but always good to hear it from, you know, the horse's mouth. You want to give us a quick rundown of what you do and how you came to be on the pod?
Yeah, sure. Well, thanks for the invite. Pretty happy to be there. Here, I should say. My background has been in the corporate world, so I worked in public equities, private equities. My niche has always been equity compensation, and that's how we sort of came together talking about share plans. But what I'm doing now, I joined a startup in Singapore called Capita. And what we do, we kind of help startups across Southeast Asia, broader Asia Pacific, with everything that has to do with equity. So we're quite ingrained in the VC world, private equity. And that's why I kind of find it fascinating what's going on across the region, having previously spent about 15 years living and about 10 years working in Australia. I've relocated to Singapore to start of the year. And throughout this period, I've actually got exposure to how things are done very differently, but in some cases quite similar in the startup ecosystem in Singapore and just broader Southeast Asia. So yeah, kind of keen to have a chat with you guys. And one of the things, and I'm sure you're going to be asking me a lot of questions about what I think what's going on there, but I think it's good to flip it back to you and see like what is kind of the general perception of Southeast Asian startup market here in Australia. Because obviously my opinion is already biased, having spent time there. But it would be good to kind of like contrast what people think Southeast Asia startup world is like to what I feel it is and where it's headed to.
Now, this is such an interesting point because in Australia, I've been to a couple of trade conferences, particularly in relation to Indonesia, and the word that always comes up is risk. And I think the perception very strongly is you're going to Southeast Asia, it's risky. You've got to have boots on the ground, so there's sort of added overheads, added costs there. And in current sort of market conditions, I think that's making people sort of shy away a little bit. I've always found it interesting how when people talk about Southeast Asia or Asia, they really just sort of lump things together. And that's how you can sort of pick people who have a sophisticated understanding and people who are just, you know, a little bit more broad spectrum over the top. Because I think so much of the Southeast Asian narrative has been sort of like a little cousin of China, which is you talk about the population size and you know how dynamic it is, all that, all things, adjectives that apply to China. And I think it's very rare to hear people really sort of hone in and say, you know, this is what I really love about this particular part of Southeast Asia's country. So an example for me with Indonesia, it's their numbers with people, digital literacy, on social media apps, photography, all those sorts. That to me is what's really interesting and somewhat unique about Indonesia. So how's that to sort of play back what at least I'm sort of thinking about for Southeast Asia? What are you feeling on the ground in Singapore?
Yeah, correct. And I think it's a good perception. And I think for a lot of Australian companies, kind of the playbook for international expansion, let's just go to US, UK. Yeah, it's like, it's, you know, familiar territory. It's easier for us. But when you think about it, the time zones, you are kind of already in the Asian time zone. Why don't you actually expand somewhere here? And then depending on the industry we do, I'm happy to talk about some of the sort of trends around the industry that are doing well. But there's a lot of opportunity, especially like on the e-commerce front as well. Like when you talk about Indonesia, right? A lot of things are going on there. Like Australian market, like I'm starting to sort of compare a little bit, but landscape here is like B2B SaaS, that's kind of the bread and butter and everyone's kind of comfortable with. That's what like VCs tend to invest in the Australian market. And what a lot of startups kind of finding here, sometimes it's hard to get access to investors. Like if you're doing manufacturing, we kind of went under fashion, but sure, maybe coming back a little bit. But what you notice in different countries, and yeah, Southeast Asia, you just say one thing, but every country is a little bit different. Like, well, it's fascinating in Indonesia, there's so many like supply chain startups, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of companies try to connect the like farmers or fisheries with the end consumer as well. And like, how does cold storage works there? Because it's like it's a whole bunch of islands, right? And like the infrastructure, it's a big problem to solve. Mm-hmm. So it's a completely different sort of world of what problems are being addressed by startups. So it's interesting to see. Singapore on its own is obviously like a massive hub in the financial sector and financial services, but at the same time it's like a mini capital of Asia in terms of like Web3 space. Yeah. So probably Dubai and Emirates maybe leading the way, but Singapore is massive, right? There's so many conferences, so many startups on the Web3 infrastructure, payments, everything's going on there. And definitely there's like a lot of players in the Australian market as well, and I always try to talk to like to them and say, hey, like why don't you know make networks there, you know, make connections, find partners, because that's the place to be. And that's definitely developing. And yeah, look, from the risk factor, yeah, that's more like a traditional perception. It's like, oh, it's kind of maybe underdeveloped, which is not really the case, right? Like, I've never been to Singapore. When I moved there, I was like, wow, this is like, I thought I lived in the first world. This is like even beyond that. I don't know what it's called, but it's a fascinating country in terms of infrastructure. And the example I love to give everyone, and maybe a question for you, is like, what do you think is the most successful startup in the world?
Before I answer that question, because I definitely have an opinion on that. Yeah. I think, you know, a key challenge with Australian startups is like trying to be global from day one, yeah, where, you know, to build a really generational and truly large venture backable business, you almost always have to go international, which is why a lot of people go to either the US or UK, because they think it's comparable markets. Do you think there's like the same kind of challenge and impetus building in Southeast Asia and the region around market size? Like, do you have to expand out to the US, other countries?
Yes and no. And there are a couple like playbooks that companies follow. So look, in terms of the size, and shout out to Guthrie Venture, so I go there, you know, they do a lot of good reports. And if I remember correctly, like 2021 was about $10 billion invested in the ecosystem here. Whereas, you know, Southeast Asia is $37 billion US, right? So the scale is a little bit different. So there's a lot of opportunity and a lot of capital. And when you think about Singapore especially, so many investors like family offices, they're setting up local operations there, whether it's China, Japan, any location, right? So the capital is there. So you don't necessarily need to expand. But in terms of international expansion, the companies, what I'm kind of seeing in Southeast Asian market, and I might just lump in India as well, which is technically not really part of it, but there's sort of like two playbooks for expansion to the US, especially when you think about like SaaS. You kind of come in early with like a basic product, you try to win clients and kind of build as you go, which is more like sort of traditional pathway, right? We might as well enter and kind of figure it out. But what a lot of companies are doing, and there's a really good example, like Darwin Box, like HR platform competing with like Workday and SAP. Yep. So what I've kind of done is, actually, they didn't really expand immediately to the US. They kind of beat out the competition in Asian market, then kind of prove to the investors, hey, if we can do it in the Asian market, like in Singapore, Southeast Asia, we could probably do it in US. So the scale of investment capital they raised at that later stage actually helps them come into the mature US market with a developed product. So that they would already have a compelling solution, but they're sort of a late entrant. Mm. So that's actually a different kind of strategy in terms of international expansion. So I feel like in Australia and startups, and look, this is my maybe naive observation, but kind of the first traditional pathway is something that a lot of companies follow. They just enter and build. But maybe it actually makes sense sometimes to, why don't we just sort of stay locally and regionally, kind of build up a scaled solution and then transition later on. Yeah, so I find that kind of dynamic quite interesting. So in a way, it's like you don't have to jump internationally. Why don't you sort of build it up? And what a lot of Southeast Asian startups are doing, kind of starting in Singapore and kind of expanding, you know, I'm just trying to make a circle with my hands in front of you, but like, you know, going to Indonesia, Malaysia, Vietnam, and then going further and further away from home.
Yep. We see a lot of the inverse of that as well, where you have like really mature, large public companies go into Southeast Asia on the assumption that what's won them market share in the States will win them market share in these countries, like Uber in China, like Amazon in, you know, different markets, India, et cetera, Spotify, Netflix. Like they're all trying to win market share because they know that these are large, incredible like countries. They've got like much larger populations than the States. Like how do you see what they're doing and where they've failed and where they've been successful contrasted with like startups who are also trying to move into the space?
Yeah, and there are a couple of markets across Asia. I guess discretionary income is increasing. Obviously, economic growth, like numbers are pretty good. And also kind of the penetration of on the internet access is always increasing. So the opportunity for like a lot of the consumer facing products and like those kind of solutions is there. And it makes sense for large companies. Okay, well, we need to tap into the market. But in a way, it's kind of hard. And it's really, you can't replicate the same strategy that applies to North America. And even you think about kind of your sales approach, kind of sort of the Western culture is maybe quite direct and aggressive, and it just doesn't work, right? So, and on a personal front, I've sort of experienced because my professional career has been in Australian corporate, essentially, and I work with, you know, clients globally, but you just call everyone a mate and kind of like, you know, figure things out. There's like a specific communication style. Yeah. So when I joined Capita and like kind of started working with startups in Singapore, like Indonesia, India, and so on, so I thought, oh, I know everything. I'm going to come in like employ my style because I'm so experienced and great at things. And I realized like actually it doesn't really work. Like it's kind of harder to connect with people and you really have to adjust the way you communicate, right? So even though you still use English, but the way people communicate and the approach and kind of focus on kind of relationship and trust is there. Mm. So for example, like even though we have a pretty good client base in Indonesia, what we find is like we actually need like local support to really kind of, you know, win over that market, right? So we recently hired someone there. So what I found interesting, and then kind of drawing parallels to all the large companies trying to replicate their strategies, you kind of see some of them not succeeding as much as they would have liked, right? And it's because the market is completely different and it's really hard to replicate. So you kind of have to sort of reinvent the wheel one way or the other and really adjust your approach in that space.
It's like starting a whole nother business within your business just to tackle like the Southeast Asian region.
Yeah, in a way. And like sometimes pricing strategies, right? You just can't replicate your, even if it's like a B2B SaaS, it's just too much. And like the funny thing I find is like the way you sort of do sales and negotiation, like in Australia and Singapore, maybe it's like, oh, this bottle of water is like, you know, $3. And you'll be like, okay, it's $3. Mm-hmm. Like when you work in India, it's like $3. No, I don't want to pay you anything. Like, you know, and you just can negotiate for upfront. But then in Indonesia, it's like, $3. Yeah, sure. Then you drink the water. It's like, actually, I don't want to pay you $3 anymore. So it's kind of like the way the business, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's just the way the business is done in negotiation and communication style. Mm-hmm. It's completely different. It's not better or worse. It just, you just have to be aware of it and kind of learn as you go. So I'm learning a lot, like just being in that space. Yeah.
Very cool. I want to stick on this point a little bit longer because to me, what seems like the fundamental mismatch is when you have a, say, foreign company trying to get into Southeast Asia or Asia, they're not necessarily coming in to solve a problem which Southeast Asian people are experiencing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, they just maybe are making the assumption that this is a problem that we're addressing in our home jurisdiction and we could replicate it over here. And going back to your first prompt, which is, you know, what startup, you know, most impresses us or do we think is? And to me, we recently did an episode on Grab. And one of the things I love about Grab is at every sort of vertical of their business, you can see the point in which they said, we're going to address this problem, whether it be, you know, we're getting people rides or, oh, so many of our drivers don't have bank accounts. So now we're providing financial services. At every point where they're scaling up, they're solving a problem for the people that they're working with. To me, that is the essence of a great startup and a great sort of global business.
Yeah, no, correct. And yeah, I'll talk about the kind of problem solving, but my question about like the world's most successful startup, I kind of have an unconventional answer, and it's Singapore. As a country. But when you think about it, we're like 57 years old, and what they've been able to accomplish and build essentially a country that didn't have, you know, many access to like natural resources, nothing, like what they've been able to achieve there, that is probably the most world's most successful startup in a way. Obviously, the investment horizon, you know, for VCs usually 12 years, so 57 maybe a bit too long in the kind of conventional sort of investment space. But yeah, it's a good example. And when you think about the country that's invested so much in its development and very proactive in terms of trying to attract business and make it easy to do. So that's why a lot of companies registered there, like tax reasons, everything else. But they really make it easy to do business. They want to encourage it. And if you invest and, you know, help out the local industry, you're going to get that level of support.
Such a good call out, because they are restricted by, you know, their own size as well as a country, and that they're incredibly small.
Yeah, so they essentially had to pivot, like, what we're going to do, right? They, you know, potentially could have done like a lot of manufacturing and so on, but it's like, yeah, well, let's invest in human capital, like education system, all that kind of stuff. But then going back to your question about problem solving, and yeah, they're completely different. And I might just talk from our own experience and what our solution is to kind of assist startups with equity and all the kind of stuff and fundraising and all the admin reporting that comes on the back of that.
Yeah, this is capital.
Yeah, correct. That's right. And what we've noticed is that we can't just have the same sort of proposition in every single jurisdiction, because sometimes the, you know, regulatory framework is not as mature, so there's no actual need or demand for some of the governance or reporting modules, right? But what startups crave in those jurisdictions is education. Right? Hey, like, we really value employee equity, and that's what, you know, Albert and I initially bonded over. And that's quite important. We want to understand how we actually incentivize our employees. So they really invest in that space, but not all the other stuff that's kind of a norm and expectation in some of the other markets. They just don't really care about it. So for us is, yeah, we can't just have, even though it's potentially the same solution, but we need to focus on the areas that make sense. And that's why for a lot of large companies, when they come in, you can't just assume that what worked there will work in this jurisdiction. So they kind of have to understand, like, what is it actually that companies need and want? And sometimes it's a bit of education first to help them understand, here are the potential things, maybe down the track will come into play. But at the moment, let's focus on something you actually need assistance with.
Something that comes up a lot when Dan and I talk about Southeast Asian companies is that just the sheer scale of the services and like solutions they do. We often talk about different super apps, you know, Alibaba, WeChat, Grab, etc. The fact that you can build super apps because the market size is so big, there's lots of opportunity. But aside from super apps, like, what are the key differences you see in Southeast Asian tech companies that you don't necessarily see in like Western companies?
Yeah, good question. Like, in terms of the scale, sometimes it's the kind of approach. So approach to hiring, I would say. So surprising things you'll see in Indonesia is your kind of seed series A companies, the number of employees they have is completely different. It's not something you would expect in the Western market. So the scale of the companies is not quite the same. But in general, kind of the, when you, Danny, were talking about risk, is kind of the traditional perception of that market is that maybe access to sort of high-end talent may not be there, right, in some of the countries in the region. But I think what's changing now is that, and what companies in Southeast Asia, so Indonesia, Philippines, Vietnam, Singapore, are starting to take advantage of is the whole remote working. I think it's kind of coincided with the boom of like the Web3 space as well. But so many like of startups that we talk to or work with, they just have employees all over the place. So even though there might have been a risk, like, okay, where are you going to get access to like high-end talent to actually build up your business and scale like on the tech side? In the jurisdictions when there's not enough infrastructure or kind of the history of track record and success. So what company is doing is like, well, we don't really care about maybe if there's no one with that experience in our home country, why don't we actually find talent overseas? So what do you find a lot is people are hiring you know, employees all over the place, and that's why some of the other startups took off will like offer assistance on the payroll side of things and ability to for companies to hire employees like all over the place. So yeah, so there's a challenge. But I feel like the Southeast Asian companies are a bit more ahead of kind of the Australian counterparts in terms of taking advantage. Like, let's just try something different. We don't have to follow the traditional, like, proven path, because maybe it hasn't been there really, right? So we kind of have to figure it out as we go.
But this is such a common, I think, observation about how Asian companies succeed is they skip steps. You know, the whole idea of, you know, you have traditional banking where you have a bank account, credit cards, et cetera. Yeah. So much of Asia is actually just skipping that step and going straight to, you know, their apps, those sorts of things.
Yeah.
So I think it goes back to my point. What I love about Indonesia, what I think makes it unique, is their population is digital literate, they're flexible, and so they're willing to sort of adopt these things. And that's fertile ground for startups. And this is where I want to flip it back to you, Ahmed. What are you seeing in Asia, in Southeast Asia, that interests you?
I think it's what interests me the most is the scale of and the size of opportunity, right? Because when you think about it, on the business side of things. Australia, yeah, decent sized market. It's not going to go anywhere. It's always going to be there. I should say not going to go anywhere, but like it's not going to grow tremendously. Yeah. Like it's quite mature. Singapore, yeah, there's a bit more potential, but it's quite steady, right? But when you think about, you know, Indonesia, India, those are like the massive markets are going to grow substantially, right? And there's so much opportunity because there's a lot of good entrepreneurs. There's a lot of good like VCs investing there. You always hear, you know, like billions of dollars raised, you know, by massive like VCs just to invest in specifically in India or Southeast Asia, right? So there's so much dry powder as you would, you know, hear about. So capital is there, opportunity is there. And just on the economic side, those countries will be growing massively and going through a lot of the change. And what I'm interested in seeing is kind of the shift of the companies that get started there. So the mobile, like when I was talking about earlier, like Indonesia, there's so many like supply chain, just trying to build like core infrastructure, but then it will transition as it matures into more like maybe your traditional fintechs or whatever happens next. So I think that's what excites me the most because it's, I don't really know what's going to happen, but it's kind of happening now and it's still relatively early days. So the bands who you listen to, maybe that's the decade of Asia and so on. Like, well, every region's going to like say like it's a decade for us and we're the best in the world and have the most potential. But yeah, but for me, it's like because it's a new region, I'm learning a lot. That's what I'm excited about because I think there's a lot of potential to like learn and also be part of that journey wherever, you know, it ends up.
Yeah. I want to flip this now because we caught up last week at Vidit's event. Mm-hmm. And what are things that are really strong in the Australian startup and tech scene that you wish were happening in Southeast Asia and Singapore specifically?
Yeah, and I think I mentioned that earlier. It's like one of the really good things here is the community. I mean, the fact that we're doing this, we met through like a network and a community that was set up in Australia and it really brings people together. So that's what I really enjoy about the Australian ecosystem. And I've seen it change so much in the last couple of years. There's so many, and I don't even know what they call those organizations, like a co-working space, an incubator, accelerator, like just like doing a bit of everything. They're just trying to support everyone. I think there's a lot of investment from like state governments and federal governments, you know, like Southeast Asia. South Australia is doing quite a bit like in the space, yeah. Pun not intended. Yeah. So that's quite, it's pretty interesting, right? So I think this is something that Southeast Asia will hopefully see and kind of learn from, kind of the power of community. And like, it will be good to bring everyone together and support each other. So the challenge, I think, in the region is a little bit segmented. And that's the exact reason that you were talking about. You kind of just lump up Southeast Asia together, but it's actually multiple countries, different languages, right? So the borders is some of them are like on islands. Like physically, you can't just like walk all over the place. Like, but in Australia, it's like one single country, and obviously, it's a bit more united than that front. But I think the challenge is like, how do you replicate it across borders, across cultures, and you know, make it strong? And ultimately, the best part about startup communities, as opposed to like your corporate world in the traditional sense, is that we're all sort of in this together. We're happy to support each other and share ideas and, you know, help each other out. Whereas in the corporate world, it's a bit more cutthroat, right? So how can we build this up in Southeast Asia to actually bring in not just like where I'm Singapore, like Singapore together, but like counterparts in you know, Indonesia, Thailand, Vietnam, the Philippines, and so on. So I think that's the challenge as we'd love to see. And that's something we can, as Southeast Asia, I think anyone in that ecosystem, we can learn a lot from Australia because I think Australian startup world has done a really good job in supporting each other.
Yeah, for sure. I think at the top of the pod now, if we go all the way to the other end of tech around public companies, we were just talking about, you know, Grab and that went public via SPAC. And a lot of investors are looking at Southeast Asia for a bit of exposure and a bit cautious about, you know, Chinese companies because of the kind of political risk. Yeah. And I think that's the attractiveness with SPACs, particularly around Southeast Asia, is you can go take a company public that doesn't necessarily have that risk, but you get the exposure. Like, how's the SPAC scene and like the noise around SPACs in Singapore and Southeast Asia?
Yeah, so in my view, I feel like it died down a little bit. So there was a bit of interest and hype there. I think for a lot of companies, it does make sense to, you know, list in markets where you have easier access to capital, especially North America and the US. But the other trend is, for example, GoTo, which is Tokopedia and Gojek, you know, merging together and listing in Indonesia. Those are pretty strong signals for a company that operates in this space, kind of staying home, right? And kind of giving benefit to local investors. And that's potentially not a very conventional way of doing things. So you sort of expect like, well, when they go straight to the US market as well, right? So I feel there's a bit of a conflict now. It's like, yeah, like US markets is still kind of the holy grail, like that's where you want to end up. But at the same time, the local markets are maturing. But to your point, yeah, the macro environment and geopolitical, there's still a bit of risk there. Obviously, what's going on with some of the tension that's happening there. So from the investment side, I think there's always going to be a bit of reservations. But hopefully with time, as exchanges mature, as more kind of fintechs come into play, and as governments provide a supportive regulatory framework, I feel kind of the need to look elsewhere will slowly fade away. And I would say that more companies will kind of be happy to stay locally. But on the spec front, I think, yeah, I wouldn't say it was a bit of a fad, but yeah, I think it was a bit too much hype, and I think it settled down a little bit. Look, it's not going to go away. I think opportunities are still there. But kind of like if I was to predict something, I would say that there's going to be a bit of a trend of staying home and staying local a bit more across Asia.
You mentioned the GoTo merger, Gojek, Tokopedia. I just want to get your sort of quick take, high-level take on that, because it really didn't make any waves in Australia. But from where I was sitting, that was like you open up the news, mind-blowing. That's such a huge merger between two giants. They were essentially two of a handful of unicorns coming out of Indo. So Mike's yours. Give us a take.
Yeah, no, this is a really good point. And before moving across to Singapore, I actually didn't really know much about kind of the ecosystem over there. And that's for the exact same reason. I think we're just focusing a bit too much on what's happening locally and then maybe in the US. So we're kind of just ignoring the region that's right there. And there's so much going on. So I kind of encourage everyone to, check out and follow the news in Southeast Asia, because there's so many cool things, that are happening there. So there's a whole bunch of websites you can sign up to, newsletters like Deal Street Asia, Tech in Asia, Backscoop as well. And they kind of give you a really good insight what's happening in those countries. And I think we all have a job to play. It's how we can bring, people together, different ecosystems, different regions, and actually share information and ideas. Because we don't have to do it all alone, right? We don't have to be focusing there. Because so many great ideas, so many great people who are going through the same challenges that we do. So if you're a startup founder or operator in Australia, most likely they know that someone kind of facing similar challenges and kind of doing it in Singapore and India. So why not just connect and learn from each other and kind of try to figure it out? So as part of my role, because, I sort of still have connection to Australia and in Singapore, we do a lot of work in Asia. I'm trying to do whatever I can to make it happen. Obviously, I'm not going to do it by myself, right? But, wherever possible, I would love to connect people with, counterparts or partners or, our clients across the region, so we can sort of share information and kind of move forward together, idealistic,
I want to use maybe the last 5 to 10 minutes of this episode to talk about one or two trends we see a lot in Southeast Asia, gaming and crypto. Oh, yeah. Where do you want to go with gaming and crypto?
It's pretty interesting. And look, just full disclosure, I was sort of up to speed with the whole crypto world until sort of DeFi took off, which is, 3-4 years ago. Yeah. And I think it just got away from me. There was just a bit too much going on. Every single niche is its own industry, so it's hard for me to keep up. So I sort of still have general interest in the space, but I can't say I'm an expert. But in Southeast Asian gaming, Axie Infinity, that whole story, so that was pretty interesting, what's going on, because when it sort of took off and it was at the peak, there were people in the Philippines quitting jobs and kind of using it as a full-time income, so that was fascinating. Then there was obviously news, about the hack, and, that place is still developing, and right now, as I mentioned earlier, I think Singapore has become a massive hub, just for general kind of Web3, if you want to bundle everything together in a crypto space. I think there's a lot of potential there. I think just general Web3 space and gaming, everyone's kind of still trying to figure it out. No one really knows what it's going to be like. Yeah. But it's kind of interesting to see where it's going. So for me, I'm kind of generally interested in this. And when you talk about gaming, I'm not talking if you cover like esports as well. I used to play games and stuff like that. I'm kind of interested in this space. I still play Warcraft 3, so I don't know if anyone remembers.
Yeah, nice,
it's been around for 20 plus years, and some people still play.
Lich King, Warcraft
3. There you go. Yeah. I'm all about it, and the community is still going, even though Blizzard gave up on them. But I think there's definitely a lot of potential, and especially kind of traditionally this region has been quite strong in this. And yeah, like the tickets for all the kind of Dota and LoL or whatever tournaments in Singapore, just like, you know, they're more expensive than like than your like Blackpink concert that's happening in Singapore as well. Like, people are going crazy. So yeah, there's definitely a lot of potential. Yeah. I don't know what the answer is to that, like what needs to happen next to take it to the next level. But yeah, I think there's plenty of eyes from the investors and also the kind of startups to go it further.
Yeah, definitely one where the Western world really lags is mobile gaming. Yeah. Like mobile gaming is just on another level in Southeast Asia. Yeah. Like I don't think people really comprehend what mobile gaming looks like in Southeast Asia unless you are playing mobile games.
Yeah, and one of my colleagues at Launcher was just playing this game and it kind of just looked like it's like PC, but it's on a whatever on the phone. It just looks so good, the graphics. Like I didn't know that was possible. And when I'm on MRT, which is like the train system in Singapore, yeah, everyone just always playing games. So you're right, actually, like the way I think of it, it's definitely just part of the daily life. And I think in Sydney when I was living here, it's like people still play Candy Crush and stuff like that. That's kind of like that's kind of the game that's popular. But I think that's it, just at the whole next level. So yeah, for sure. I can't say like I'm particularly in that space, but yeah, I've kind of observed. I think there's a lot of potential, and I'm sure a lot of companies actually do a lot of work in that space to sort of take advantage.
Yeah. The really last thing I do also want to hit on is like e-commerce in Southeast Asia, because again, a very different game to what people play here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, so like if I had to pick like the three industries, like fintech is there, e-commerce, and like sort of the general Web3. And yeah, especially keep going back to Indonesia, but that's kind of the place for e-commerce. And it is fascinating, obviously, like what Tokopedia was able to achieve and what's going on there. But there's a lot more companies coming up, and it's purely because of the scale that's available to companies to take advantage of, right? So access to markets, the population, like increasing discretionary income. So much potential there. And yeah, like in Australia, it's just not quite there yet. So I think it doesn't make sense for a lot of countries to even like, sorry, companies to look at this market because there's limited upside. But yeah, I think there's like nearly endless potential across multiple jurisdictions in that space for sure.
That might be a good place to sort of finish up, which is going back to that point, you know, how do we connect into the Southeast Asian, Asian market? We're just sort of mentioning there, Australia, you know, there isn't quite that nice fit where, you know, we're not a particularly big market size, so really they're not coming this way. We don't also have that much capital necessarily, so we're not necessarily going that way either. There's maybe a skill exchange there, but then, you know, America's different, Europe's different, China's different. So trying to round all that together, what's your pitch for why people should be getting into Asia, and what can Asia offer all those different jurisdictions in the world as well?
Yeah, and I want to sort of maybe challenge a little bit the notion that not enough is actually sort of being done when you look at what governments are trying to organize. You know, the Singapore and Australian governments actually have a lot of programs that kind of try to facilitate, you know, bilateral sort of working together and like for startups. There's recently Australian and Indian government created a exchange program for female founders to actually go in and get exposure in each other's markets and also help launch their products in, you know, other India and Australia. So there's actually quite a lot going on to connect that at sort of the government level. So I think next, and look, obviously government is limited in terms of their resources and what they can do. So the challenge is up to, you know, startup operators to do what we can. Look, I think there's a lot of more opportunity because even on the daily life, when you go to Singapore or Asia, like the payment system is just so beyond what we have. Like, you know, you tap your card on the PayWave, but there's so much more you can do there and it's just so easy. So I think just general awareness of what's possible, like in different segments in the market, that's what, you know, that region can offer to someone in Australia. Just go explore, see what's out there. It's not something, and as you said, like we don't really have much visibility of what's going on. So I think I encourage everyone to kind of be curious and check it out. You might have heard like during this conversation, like Grab and, you know, GoTo, and but you might not be familiar exactly what they do, right? But there's such massive companies and their solutions are quite interesting. So it'd be good to check it out. And for example, like a lot of the large companies based in Singapore, like Shopback, I think they've recently started launching and started a campaign in Sydney on the light rail monorail thing. So yeah, there's actually examples of companies sort of working together, expanding either from Australia to Southeast Asia, from Southeast Asia to Australia. So the work is being done. There's opportunity for partnership. And I think it's up, kind of up to us to sort of expand our horizons, be a bit more open-minded, learn a lot. And like, what do you do with that information? you realize, okay, maybe that's not for us, but at least I've learned something, you know? And that's kind of one of the reasons I sort of moved to Singapore. That might have been like the worst decision of my life, and I completely hated it. But then my partner and I, and like 50 years later, I remember that time we decided to move countries. It was the worst. It was terrible. At least it'll be a good story. So I think, yeah, just give it a go. Have a chat with people, connect, reach out, ask questions, and then you never know what it might lead to. It might create some opportunities for you.
For sure. Thanks. This is probably a nice time to end the pod. I mean, if someone wants to get in touch with you, you know, talk about, you know, what you're doing at Capita, ESOPs, et cetera, how can someone do that?
Yeah, probably I'm kind of on Instagram and Twitter, but I never post anything there. So I just spam people on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn will be the best way to connect with me. So you can just look me up as Amit, say A-M-I-T, Majumdar, M-A-J-U-M-D-E-R. Call my CFA because there's a lot of Amit Majumdars there. So you'll find me, reach out, happy to chat next time. Anyone's in Singapore, want some suggestions on things to do, people to talk to, more than happy to do that.
Let's finish up there. Thank you for listening to the Fresh Capital Podcast, a podcast about companies and investing told in a refreshingly simple way. Thanks again to Amit, and we'll catch you all next week. See ya.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Fresh Capital. Every week, we provide a refreshingly simple way to learn how companies operate and how investing works. Just a reminder, all information contained in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, financial, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Fresh Capital are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Any opinions expressed in the show are not recommendations or advice. Please consult a licensed financial professional before you jump in. As always, we look forward to seeing you next week. See ya!